formal presentation from the Department of MHPRC on the amendments to the Act and what it seeks to achieve in order. From a procedural point of view, we then went to our provinces, permanent delegates, to brief our provinces on the amendment basis. Having had an opportunity of quickly going through submissions of provinces, it is quite clear that most of the provinces have had public hearings, with the exception of one or two. But most of the provinces had public hearings, and some of their submissions are reflective of those public hearings. But because of its procedure, it would be expected that province by province must then make their submission as submitted by the legislature. And of course, the Department and MHPRC, where there are issues that you know, natural facts, it would be expected that some of the issues that would need clarity, those that would need explanation, whatever new things that have been brought to the fore from provinces and so forth, you will then be able to respond to that and then have a discussion on that, which will also follow the same procedure again of going back to the province and for provinces now to finalize their mandate. And once we come back with the final mandate now, we conclude the process. Either adopt the 7 provinces as not, we are not in favor of this piece of legislation, then unfortunately we will have to start the process again. If more than 7 plus, not even 7 plus, 7 plus, 5 plus, if they say that not, we are in agreement with the piece of legislation and propose, then the committee will have all the rights to adopt the piece of legislation and the amendment and we start to do the House for adoption. In terms of the order, we will start with the province, which is the Eastern Cape. And according to what I have before me from the Eastern Cape, the Eastern Cape did not submit anything. In fact, we have an apology from the permanent delegate, who is not well. She has been cooked off. So obviously we'll get to the next problem. F, which has requested also to be present after 5 minutes or 15 minutes, which leaves us with GB.
Thank you, Chairperson. As we had already alluded on various aspects of these housing consumer protection and amendment bills, considering this actually holds, in fact, we went for briefing, and after the briefings, I immediately had requested that we fast track the public hearing so that we would be on time. And of course, with the public hearings were then held, which I was also present. Fortunately, or probably unfortunately, people did not know whether they were expected to make a submission, written submission. Some, we allowed them to give their verbal presentation. In line with that, they should actually, as they would be indicating that what the portfolio committee should convey, and also give the authority to the permanent delegate in the negotiation mandate what the province wants. If you go through it, because there are quite a lot of things they are suggesting. I have gone through also with the in line with the deal. There's nothing new that the province they try to bring. That's what needs to be done, but they emphasize that this should actually be done, this should be done. And therefore, it suffices to say that the Chabdeng, when they now probably the portfolio committee said, then they agree that they will support the principle and the details of the housing consumer protection measurement B. And therefore, the endorsement is that Chabdeng does support the B.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you very much, Honorable maybe just as a way, because members are allowed to participate in the submission of housing. It would be good that during the response, a consent raised here around the invisibility of the inspectors, and I see coming in a number of problems, but maybe just let's deal with it in the context of our game. Well, if it is an issue that falls within the formation or formulation of the Act, or is an issue that will find a threshold in the regulation, I think it would be quite important that we clarify that issue. And then a very important point as well here is raised in relation to material. And I think it's a matter maybe that goes to standards and in the context of material that needs to be used. A health matter is raised here on the asbestosis question. During our discussion, we remember an issue was raised in relation to the capacity to which provinces and municipalities will have to play an active and strategic role, and the capacity of NHBRC also to be extended to that level. And I'll then raise that point here. And I don't know what bullet number it is, but on page 3, of course, the issue of youth and women, Chabdeng also raises the question of women and youth. And, okay, fine. Okay. I think those are the issues I managed to pick up in the Chabdeng.
Do you want me to follow up on this? Yes. Just to send you, on that issue of inspectorate, though probably it was not accounting intensive, the issue was that the department was blamed by building houses that actually are not in terms of the standard. After building, there was the structure. After 3 months or so, that structure is completely was a major repair. Then I immediately raised an issue that the only people that can help us are the very people who, the occupants. We normally hear that they sign a happy letter. When you sign a happy letter, you accept the structure as it is, without knowing the implications of what is going to happen thereafter. Then I said, then it would be better that before signing this happy letter, they must actually satisfy themselves with the minute. And also the issue of the inspectorate is that the belief is that whoever is building houses must say to the inspector, please, let's have these things, I want to build. And because it's after money. So even if the inspector would see that this house is not nice, he would always endorse it and say it's fine. So those are the things on the issue that they raised, and we said, please help us. Don't find happiness if you're not happy.
No, that's fine. Is there any other matter before we
just next person? How do a person write a happy letter who knows nothing about construction? Where does the happy letter come from? That is very serious. It means payments are done because an ordinary old lady pensioner have been approached by a draft and said it's a happy letter that you are happy about it. Obviously she's happy because she doesn't have a house. You know, that has to be looked into. I don't know, the department will have to tell us where it comes from, where the happy letter comes from. This is very serious. If I know somebody, I'll help this somebody to go to court. Really, because somebody has led this person, you know, around the bush. That should not, a happy letter should never exist. I think the people who have to occupy the house cannot sign a happy letter. If the structure is not well, the inspector must sign the happy letter, which is within the law. The inspector inspects every step of that particular construction. And after signing the happy letter, then the payment is done. Something is seriously wrong with what we do. I see the members of the department are saying, yes, 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 but what is happening? What is happening? Who has to take the control on the ground? This is my worry, you know, this thing of happy letter was coming forward yesterday also, you know, and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, thank you very much,
sir.
Maybe we need to look at it from a constitutional point of view, a policy level, to say a developer builds a house on wood instruction. And if we take government, then who must be happy?
Government.
If government is supposed to be happy, government must respect and sign the happy letter.
Definitely.
And hand it over.
Definitely.
The point is, Reverend is quite correct. Because if you and I go out and we buy a piece of ground in Goodwood, and we approach Absa for a bond, and here are the plans, and the certificate of water and electricity that will be connected by the municipality. They will give you the bond. But they will expect reports from time to time, but not a happy letter from you, but a report and eventually a certificate from the municipal engineer to say that the water, the sewage, the electricity, and the building and the foundation, everything was 100%. Before they'll pay the final amount. And even then they'll keep back their attention. Now here we have a system where the government of South Africa allows people to sign fraudulent happy letters. Because the government is right. If I haven't had a house for my whole life, and yet suddenly somebody that looks at a million times better than the Mkumba, I will be happy, of course I'm happy. But that doesn't mean to say that construction is according to the rules.
Alright, I hope the department, of course, will comment on the comment. Can we then safely say that is the submission of GP? Let's go to the case at hand. With all the responsibilities and mandates entrusted on the special delegate, you are welcome to take us to the
Mr. Chetibodi, the chair, so he would take us to the
chair. Okay. Thank you, Chair. Apologies for being late. They forgot to pick me up at the airport, so I was waiting and waiting and waiting tonight to make a Chair Kwazulu-Natal didn't have much to complain about at this stage. We might come back again on the final mandate. But on our public hearings, it was brought out quite explicitly by the community at large that the NSERT must seriously look at the entry level for incoming future contractors, and that was quite clear, because the entry level at the moment
hampers the ability of new contractors to enter the market successfully. As I said, we will come back when we have our final mandate for political issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There are two things that I pick up from KZN. One is the negotiating mandate signed by the chairperson of the standing committee instead of the speaker of the legislature, which is a procedural flaw. I think that needs to be corrected when you submit your final mandate. And it's quite interesting to note that KwaZulu-Natal during the briefing was the most robust problem. In terms of the intentions, the definitions, I remember KwaZulu-Natal raised a number of issues. But now they are negotiating by saying that they are fine. Yeah. And I hope that during the final negotiating mandate, KwaZulu-Natal is not going to come with those issues, which will impact yourself in new issues. Because during the final mandate, we'll be paralyzing the thing. This was the forum for KZN to submit those substantive issues that you think are quite important. You reflected in the meeting.
Here, we did have a very robust debate in the initial briefing, but subsequent to that, we were thoroughly briefed by the NSDRC. In fact, I must also bring to the meeting that when they made the undertaking in the first briefing, they failed to pitch up. I want to say that on record. And it resulted in a backlog of up to 2 weeks, so we had to push for public hearing quickly. So I want to say that on record that the officials failed as agreed at the first meeting, yeah. But the provincial office came to the party and we had a full half-day briefing that settled the fears that we arranged.
No, I'm happy then if that is the case. Just for that omission of the purpose of mortality, the mandate from the legislature. Okay. That's the case at the end. Oh, you want to raise something on this? Thank you, Chairperson. You are raising a very pertinent issue here. In the past, we concerned in that. Now, what do we do with this negotiating mandate? Because it's signed by a chairperson. We would expect that there was an independent person to sign in and speak out with somebody else. A deputy speaker. Now, if we can get clarity, what transpired there, whether they were aware of it, or it was by vision, or it was because of pressure that they wanted to do this thing and come what to it. Not only if we can get that clarity, let us not assume that when it's an error in the record, let's find out what happened.
The reason why I just brought it to their attention and not to make an issue out of it, it's precisely because of these are negotiating mandates. But with the final mandate, should the mandate be signed by any other person other than the speaker or the deputy speaker or the legislature, that mandate would not stand. And therefore it would disadvantage in the shop. So for now, these are just negotiating mandates, not a final mandate. And that's what I must bring to the test. Okay.
Let's then go to Pumala.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think most of Limpopo, the negotiating mandate was signed by the chairperson of the committee. But a briefing was done, public hearings were held on the 22nd because they divided themselves into the regions that we have in the province. And then there were concerns that were raised. And the first one was to say that the bill is to address the extremely poor quality of RDP houses in the province, as you know that we have a lot of them. And the disappearance of contractors. But we're given an authority by the Department of Local Government and Housing to investigate that. Yeah, this is dealing with that. And I think it was recommended that legal action should be taken because we have a lot of RDP houses that are in. Some of them have not even been constructed. And the other role that was seriously scrutinized was the role that is played by the NHDRC. Being recommended that together with the department, they should cooperate to ensure that quality houses are being built. Here it is being referred to as the inspectorate. We're informed that the municipalities are having their own inspectorate, the department and NHPRC, but when it comes to the houses themselves, it doesn't even indicate that the inspector has been on site. We asked ourselves as to where are these people? Are they just signing to agree that contractors must be paid without even going to look at the houses themselves, because the structures are very disappointing. Even the unblocked projects, you ask yourself whether this has been an unblocked project or what is happening exactly, because I mean most of the structures are completely within a few months' time going to fall apart again. So we said NHPRC must ensure that they do their part. They play that part that they're supposed to play to ensure that no contractor is being given a go-ahead without them ensuring that the structure that has been put in place is of good quality. Limpopo is also recommending that punitive measures against inspectors, contractors, and housing consumers who violate the bill should be included in the bill. And they take this very serious. And homeowners should not in any way whatsoever be made to pay any fees related to poor quality housing, such as expenses, should be borne by contractors or the department. And the registration of builders should also be extended to contractor employees so that they are also individually accountable for poor management. But Limpopo supports the provisions of the bill and recommends to the permanent delegates to negotiate in favor of the bill. But the concerns must be taken seriously. Thank you,
no, thank you very much. third problem to raise the issue of the role of the municipalities, visibility of NHPRC, and the role of local government and housing in provinces. But a very radical one, I would want to raise it up to hear how you respond to it, that employees should also be held equally accountable. I would really love to hear what that question is. Okay, any other
issues? That is serious.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, if you, with your indulgence, may I set the record straight? Though I was not actually installment and also the reprimanded of the person who signed the reprimanded. It is the chairman that I also failed to pick it up. No, I told them because yesterday I came here and I was in the hurry and reading it that night. I did not look at it, but I think it up so that it should not be reflected since the house has just done everything. And yes, which is, it looks like we all fall in the same category. But we will convey the message. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. that aspect, I must thank KwaZulu-Natal, because if I had not picked out of KwaZulu-Natal, we might not have picked it out of other problems. And perhaps end up in serious problems when it comes to the final mandate. So let us just make sure that we don't repeat that mistake again. Any other issue on...
Yeah, Chairperson, when Limpopo says disappearing of contractors, there's nothing wrong if a contractor disappears. Totally nothing wrong. In terms of payment, a contractor pays for the work done. Then if he works and he disappears, this work is not going to be paid. Which means the government gains from a disappearing contractor if things are done accordingly. But the problem of this government pays people before they start working. I don't know where do they get it from. I don't know where do they get it from. There's nothing wrong if a contractor disappears, because we lose nothing. Maybe it's better for him to disappear. But if we do our things correctly, we lose nothing. We instead gain. Because he shall have work, and that work is not going to be paid because he has disappeared. But this one we have paid because it was completed. You know, and the other thing, the NHBRC, what are we doing? Are we only registering? Are we also not deregistering for people who do not comply? I want to understand that. If you deregister, what is your data for now? How many has been deregistered? Otherwise, we make this government a banana government. Huh? Is the department listening, Chair? Are they listening?
Yeah.
Yeah, we cannot make joke of what we are doing, as if we do not know what we are doing. The things I'm talking about have been there before 1994. I'm divulging the information I had before 1994. That's the information I'm divulging. And therefore, I cannot expect that things, you know, have gone down after 94. What is wrong?
Okay, Kamal Kande from KwaZulu-Natal. I think the Reverend raised a very important issue. Question of the disappearing contractors, and I think he made an issue of the fact that the departments that they are paid in advance rather than doing them at appropriate times when their work is completed. So I just want clarity in terms of that. Is that what the department does? Do they pay people beforehand, or is it only when a particular piece of work is either completed or part of it is completed?
Can you flag that one? We'll come back to it, because I guess some of the issues, of course, were mainly informed of the addressing the question of the historical disadvantage, where you find a contractor with one branch introducing. He's got all the things, the only thing that he doesn't have is the necessary resources. And sometimes, therefore, the department would then make such advance payments in order to keep that of your assistant to get into the business. But when asked, you know, the first thing that Papi does when he's got 100,000 and start out cash, he starts working. The first thing that Papi does is goes for an MS. And by the time he's supposed to start working,
no money.
The money is finished. So, but the department is here, you will assist us in addressing some of the issues. If there's nothing from Limpopo, okay, let's go forward.
Thank you. I think the members are correct, and that's exactly what Limpopo is saying, because there are so many contractors who have done half cooked job and left. They disappeared. Those are the people that we are saying they must come back. And we asked specifically, why did the Department of Local Government and Housing pay those people who have done nothing? They just put a slab and disappeared, but they've been paid. But also the question must also go to the inspectors. They said we have three tiers of inspectors, but on the ground, we didn't see the work that they are supposed to be doing. Those are the people that are supposed to be on the ground to monitor that the work that is being done is the correct one. But it's not that the department ends up paying and then those people disappear knowing that they've done completely nothing, they've done a mess. Because some of the walls are even about to fall. So that's what we are saying here, people. Thank you.
Something is because if I may add, you know, every level is being inspected. You don't wait for a person to complete a house, then you're going to inspect. But every step is inspected. The guy says something is seriously wrong, maybe bribing has become the order of the day. But just continue, we will say at a particular point that something we have to look into very seriously. Because there's no reason for us being robbed by this.
That's fine. we will deal with some of them will be resolved in December. Yes, they will be resolved in December. December is a very important month. And in Limpopo for that matter.
Okay.
They will be resolved. Can we then get to Pumana?
Thank you, Chief. The good news is that the report was signed by the speaker as a chief.
Yo. What is it?
That's where the good news comes. So that news is I did not have occasion to present the bill to the committee. Consequently, the department was requested to go and do it, the briefing, which only happened last week. No? This week? Last week. It happened last week. And they have now decided, the committee has decided that they want to have public hearings. And they've now written this letter stating that they need more time, and it's envisaged that by Wednesday the 19th of September, the legislature will be able to submit its negotiating mandate. I don't know if you want to know the background about this, about why this happened. I can tell you why this happened from my side, but I don't know if you want to hear it. It's up to you.
Okay. Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, the issue was also raised the other issue that we in the programming committee, a letter was received from Mpumalanga requesting the same. Looking at the time frame which has been set up, I think are we not debating this on the 20th? Provisional.
We are receiving final mandate on the 12th of September.
No. That was the issue which was raised, and then the dilemma was that why has not this been done? Why have they waited to take this so long? And I think this is an opportunity for Pumalanga to raise this issue, because the chairperson in the programming committee ruled that we will then play by the and hear the outcome of this meeting, because I made mention that the negotiating mandate is at 10 o'clock. So I'm sure that it will be expected from you that what is the reason.
Because what we probably may convey that, as you have said earlier on, that if we have five provinces and one, then we will continue with the Vajrayana, with the voting, and it would be probably putting at their disadvantage. If they would have a valid reason why they probably have not done this and why they would probably want to come at a later stage. And we cannot postpone this and say, no, let's postpone the Vajrayana, the debate on that date. I think it would be quite an important that you get the gist of the whole thing, so that when you report to the shelter, you'll be knowing exactly why. Because they are going to respond to the letter which is written to you, but I think it's written by the premier, not mistaken. And we don't deal with premiers, we deal with the rest of them, with people. Yeah. Thank you.
I think we're
enough for us to get
the reasons why.
Okay. The point is that as per the program that was out months before we actually heard the briefing by the department, the hearings, the briefings from by the permanent delegate should have happened on the 2nd or 3rd. I availed myself for any one of the 2 days, and the secretary or the liaison officer at Leader's House, now Fort Constituency House, the Mpumalanga liaison officer, liaised with the department, with the committee and with the province, and came back and said, no, sorry, they can't accommodate me on the 2nd and 3rd, because they were unable to have their programming committee, or some reason was given. And I said, oh, no, that's all right, but the next week, which was the week that ended on the 9th and the 10th, or the 8th and the 9th, I think. On that week, which is the week following the 2nd and the 3rd, this committee went on oversight visits to the two provinces, and I, together with Honorable Matanyana and Honorable Trivani and Kumla, went to Northern Cape. I said, all right, try and negotiate for the Friday, because we'll be back from Northern Cape on the Wednesday evening. Thursday is a public holiday, but I'm prepared to go to Mpumalanga, and we can do the briefing on the Friday. Well, they said, no, that's not possible, because on the Friday something else is on. And I then said, well, try for the following week, because the following week was provincial week in any case, when the whole delegation was in the province. And I said, please try for the following week. And they came back and said, no, sorry, on Tuesday they started the public hearings, all these various public hearings, Zabas or whatever they called, Leaders all over the province, and they couldn't accommodate. And I said, well, our visit starts on Tuesday, I'm prepared to come down on Sunday. Then on Monday, I'll offer my day of party work for the briefing. I said, no, that is a political holiday. They're not coming to the office. It's there for party work, and they will not entertain me. I said, well, can we fit it in somewhere during that week? No, the meetings and the hearings and the public things are very important. So I came back to Cape Town without having had the hearing done. And the following week, I was here in Cape Town, and we tried. Eventually, they came back and said that last Wednesday, they would be able to accommodate, which was the 30th, I think. And that was not possible for me at such short notice, because, as you know, the delegations were in state and parliament of the people, and I had already got special dispensation, because my party sent me to this conference on the electoral systems. And then the secretary said, well, she'll try and get the department to go to do the briefing, which then happened. So the briefing happened last Wednesday. The department did the briefing. So that was the first time that they could accommodate it. I'm trying to think what the date was. It was the 20th. We started on the 27th, I think.
It was the 29th.
So on the 29th, which is actually a month after the set date, on the on the NCOB in Parliament because the hearing took place. And at that hearing, I kept in touch with the secretary at Regis House, and she then came back to me and said, yes, the briefing did take place, it was very successful, but they decided to do public hearings, which starts tomorrow. I think, yeah, tomorrow. Now that's the long and the short of the whole thing here. I don't want to ridicule my problems, but from my side, I certainly did my best in trying to negotiate a deal whatever the date that I could help with accommodating. But it seems that they were unable to. And on a previous occasion, I also had a problem, and I eventually had to drive from Johannesburg to Dachau. Out in the Bundus, you know, if you know where Dachau is, near Wapperthal. I don't know. I said Paul Kruger gave that farm to the people, but it's called Dachau. And to go and do a briefing in Dachau to accommodate the committee, so it's now up to this committee to decide what to do. But she just, by the way, I see a letter from the department bringing in changes to certain clauses and even the new section. Now, if we've already passed the negotiating stage, how do we accommodate that?
In actual fact, I'm looking at this thing now, and I think the department is absolutely out of order.
Yeah.
It shouldn't even have been.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Just we are considering provincial mandate. If during the response by the department there are issues that you want to respond to which are relevant to what has been said, you are free to do that. But may we just return this to
your people? Thank you.
Because the department is not involved in this instance.
It's an apology. It's a formal apology from the also chapter of the committee to change. But are we on this issue of tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take all this and then we want to talk about it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, I think Mr. Watson should bring this up. Now, I don't think in poverty it is a problem. We all experienced the very same thing on the very first date when we wanted to build the program. They just told us that they don't have time. They are already engaged somewhere else. And we tried to negotiate with them that, please, see the agents of this beat. Can you now find an alternative date? Or can we go on in an informal meeting so that you know the gist? Now, fortunately, Gauteng, they were present on the day when there was actually the hearing on the Watsman on that day when the department was here. They were in the light of what was happening. So I requested them that, can you fast track it? And they fast tracked it, and then we had the Watsman at the briefing. Then I said, let's now go to the next step and do the public hearing. And I would like to be present. Inform me on time because I want to be there to find out exactly what is happening. So, Mr. Watson, I think he has gone out of his way, really trying to persuade these people, and he's way out of his way. And I don't think he can be held accountable. I think the matter now that they have written a letter, it is up to the chairperson to deal with the letter. And I think, unfortunately, come the 20th, we will go ahead. Thank you.
Chair, I think the council must decide how serious they take the issue. We went as president, we went up in a limb, we got our staff hopping, we got our members hopping to make sure we had the public hearing, to have everything in place so that we can return a mandate.
And
and in NHL and in SBRC, we actually when the lieutenant delegate came and we showed out this pleasure, we said take it up in NHBRC, that they didn't send the officials, but somehow between they and our staff, they managed to secure again quickly. At short notice, we had to call up our members. We had our staff, we got the lady, and we yeah, and it's no excuse. It's absolutely no excuse. It's how seriously you take your work.
Mr. Chairman, might I just do a follow-up on that theory? It's a question of course, isn't it? And I agree with Mr. Gibbon. It's a question of how seriously the problems of take the issue. We wanted to have, originally when we set this down, we wanted to have about 5 to 6 of the public hearings. But because of the time limitation, over and above whatever he had mentioned, we reduced that to 2. But we ensured that we have a mandate over here. Otherwise, what happened is it blocked the entire system. So I'm saying that the various provinces must understand the importance of all these legislations and take them more seriously.
Thank you. I think as members, we need to just say it's unfortunate Mpumalanga has decided to do what he did to the Honorable Watson. But I'm proposing that I think Honorable is the speaker who wrote to the chairperson. That's the reason the chairperson questioned why the speaker is writing to him. It's up to the chairperson to go and report to the chairperson of the council of the outcome of this meeting, but I'm proposing that we go ahead. Malanga will take us on the way if you wish. Thank you.
So I didn't want to suppress debate or engagement on this matter, but it's quite clear that this is just a procedural issue. We'll have to write to respond to this letter and explain processes to the speaker. And, well, of course, I take it that those that were signed by chairperson, you take it upon yourself in your provinces to deal with that. But in Mpumalanga, obviously, we'll have to respond to them. It's worse that they are even requesting that they are envisaging to have it's envisaged that by Wednesday the 19th September so that the legislature will be able to submit its negotiating mandate. Whereas we are supposed to be dealing with final mandates on the 12th and the 20th, the House will then engage with the team. So it automatically falls off. And that goes equally for what is it? The recent case, because now about they've got almost a similar thing of wanting to have their public hearing and so forth. Just to bring it to their attention that whatever they'll be submitting beyond this meeting on the 12th, it will be a final mandate. It will not be a consenting mandate. So the considerations will be different. So I think we are agree to resolve in that case.
I was scared to go into a big debate because I don't want to put my province in a bad light. I'm part of that province. And I take responsibility for the province. And I still think it's not the province. I think maybe there was a bit of rank pulling from an individual. That's my impression. But if we want to take the matter further to the chairperson of the NDOP, I'm in agreement. But I think then we should also, in fairness to me, get a report from the liaison officer that is the liaison officer between us and the province, so that she can also give you a report on the endeavors from her side and my side to solve this problem. Maybe there's a misunderstanding of how things work in that particular commission. But I don't understand why, because the dates of hearing and negotiating mandates and final mandates and the debate is I'm sure it circulates to the provinces in time.
Alright. Can we then go to the Lord's Cup? Oh,
it's
me.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I guess most of the issues that that my province is raising have been raised by other provinces. But just for purposes of recording, is the emphasis again on the role of the provincial, local government and provincial government. But having had the benefit of creating the department and being part of that meeting, because I see it's not captured in that way, the spirit that this issue was raised was to say, at one level, housing is a concurrent responsibility. And the province has got its own equitable share, for which, by legislation, I suppose the province will have to register with NHBRC. So, now, at another level, it is unfair. At the present moment, housing department is busy now with its assessment of accrediting municipalities to build housing. And once those municipalities have been accredited, it would therefore mean that they must also register with NHBRC. But the role of the MEC is not clearly defined in the legislation. And I think that's where it comes in. To say we need to define the role of the MEC, because housing by its very nature is a concurrent function. But you only have the role of the minister in terms of appeals and all the sort of things. But the MEC is not really identified. Then the second one it relates to the one that has been overemphasized on the capacity. Once the MEC's role is defined, then how do you define the role of the NHBRC at a provincial level in terms of handling disputes, blah, 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 blah. Because one of the key problems that has been identified, and I think that is a spirit that is coming out from problems, that we don't know where the NHBRC is. Now, if that concurrent function is defined and clearly located within the legislation, then it must also be clear on the extent to which the NHBRC will be able to play that role at the level of provinces and so forth. It might be cumbersome as the way I'm through the committee. It might be cumbersome at the local municipal level. But at least at the provincial level we need to have an approach. What was the other issue? Yeah. I mean that's the only two areas that I think need emphasis. Other than that, most of the things as recorded or submitted reflect on the submission, of course, that's bearing on what other provinces have been raising. I hope I've been brief enough. That's the report of the Northern Cape.
See, I just want some clarity. Don't think we confuse ourselves. Your opening remarks on behalf of the Northern Cape is just the legislation of the municipalities and the province. I think we must get it clear that this is only an amendment to the 1998 Act. The structure is already there of the issue of NHBRC. Now it's filtering down to a place where you hadn't been there before. And I come back to my issue of municipalities and the province. Because the province is actually your financier. Department of Housing National is your main financier. The conduit via which it comes through is your province and ultimately your municipality. So there's no question of registration of municipalities and provinces, because you can't be the employer on the one hand and also the custodian of the NHRDC on the other hand, because the Department of Housing is the custodian of the NHDRC. And my issue comes back to our registration, because when you do a contract, I am building this house here as a developer, I have to pay a percentage of the fee to the NHDRC for the services. So you can't be paying now, when you talk about province registering, the municipality registering, then it means technically the province has to pay a fee, the municipality has to pay a fee. The contractor is doing their job on behalf of the province or National Department of Housing, has to pay a fee. So there's three lots of people supposed to pay for one lot of work. I'm building one house, but I've got National Department who's funding it, provincial department who's conducting it, municipality who's seeing that it's been built, and then ultimately the homeowner. The homeowner doesn't have to pay, because in that contract value, the contractor who's doing the work, he has to be registered one, to perform as a contractor, and two, a percentage of his value, in this case if our subsidy is 39,000 rand, a percentage of the 39,000 rand goes towards NHDRC for their functions of supervision and warranty. I think we must get that clear. I'm not talking on behalf of NHDRC, but we mustn't confuse ourselves with all this registration level.
Chairperson, yes, I do see the reason why the Northern Cape actually comes from that premise, that the most of the power are actually invested in the ministry. But what I have thought that is, by amending the whole section 22, building a new concept into it, it was also safe to say that it was actually sort of limiting, putting those limitations, but it does not actually make mention of the MEC. What is the MEC role? It's only the minister and the council, where the council can refuse, but it also built in section 29 that they should not refuse or grant unreasonably. Now, I don't know how it's unreasonably, it would be me, but I think I would concur with that. We don't see the role of the MEC in whether it's a ceremonial dinner or whatever. I think we should come out more clear. That's what also I did go through the section 22, but as the Northern Cape are putting it, which is the kind of I think we need to probably. I don't know whether it is envisaged that they would do it or no, putting up regulations, which will also encapsulate that the MEC will do ABC by the minister in the regulations that he or she might put in. I don't know. The department are there probably to help us. Thank you.
Any other member? On the road cut? Okay. In the absence of any other member on the road cut, I will say that we are raising issues as submitted by the committee. If there's any further clarity that is needed, we will do that. But once we arrive at the negotiating the final mandate, then obviously at some point I will have to lose my chairpersonship and become a permanent delegate of the Northern Cape, independent in particular position and so forth. But we take the time, I take the point. It's to the benefit of the portfolio committee in the province, I think, and to note that in terms of the approach, these are the responses and so forth. So either reconsider your position or step back from it. Alright. In the absence of anything, then can we go to
Northwest?
nothing now chairperson. I don't have anything for me. I was unable to do the briefing because we were outside the country and the department made the briefing with the foreign. We have been struggling up until now. I thought Matilda will come through the door to give me something from that end, but it seems it didn't work out. So I do not have anything with me really to present to the committee now. Thank you again.
I think the same attitude will prevail, that final mandate,
yeah,
if there's nothing that comes up before we accept. Okay.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, the committee was briefed of the standing committee, okay? And we have told them that the speaker needs to sign the mandate. But the typical administration case, they went and the chairperson needs to sign the mandate, but we will get it back. I will go back and tell them again. Chair, we want to thank NHBRC for attending, as well as the Department of Housing, National and Provincial, as well as the Provincial NHBRC. The Western Cape has got no problems. We've sorted out all problems there, and we support it. It's our negotiating mandate. Thank you.
Mm. Well, that's fine then. Rest up on the skin. Okay then, can we then give the department on this? Okay, free trade, are they in the same applies?
Chancellor was with Dr. Patel this morning in the programming committee. It seems as if he was not even aware of the meeting sitting today. And I tried to explain to him that we are sitting at 10 o'clock and it will be ET05. Now I'm surprised he probably not here. Something might have happened.
Do you remember?
He was concerned. I don't know whether he was probably being actually asked.
He wanted to say from Hoyer.
Van Tierden. Van Tierden. The Van
Rijn, I haven't seen
it. I teach you. It's you.
It's you. That's correct.
And it's in the teacher. What's my limited experience? Can I make a ruling to say that the committee knows the solution? But of course, in the absence of the permanent changing, we but there's nothing that stops, of course, and if you ask if you speak of something from the system that you want to respond to and so forth. But as a committee, we take long to the position. We welcome it.
Just to put a line over, in the absence of the permanent delegate and the alternative, because the alternative
is here. No, that's fine then. The departmental cohesion and the NHBRC and the response issues that we think are important for provinces to consider when formulating their final mandate. Or areas that you think maybe need more clarity, or areas that you think might have created confusion and over expectation
in the form that we are drafting a new legislation, and maybe we forget that we are just coming to address a particular problem. Okay then, who should first? The department or any university?
Maybe we allow the energy to speak and then we will see the mobile.
Okay. Should that match you?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members, representatives from the National Department. I think I'll just try to respond to a few key matters just to clarify some of the issues that have been raised. Because to me, there aren't many major challenges, except that I think there has been maybe some misunderstanding in some areas. I also want to thank all the provinces for having invited us and having given us the opportunity to explain our role and also explain the amendment. But I also need to indicate that in some of the comments that we've just gone through, there seems to be a need to clarify subsidy and non-subsidy, as we are players in both. I will start off with the comment from Kauteng. Visibility of inspection. In the non-subsidy section, I'll consider it to be a technical matter, an administrative matter, not a policy matter. In the non-subsidy sector, I think we started at stage 2. But in the next round, we're looking at 231, increasing the presence of inspectors in the non-subsidy sector. In the subsidy sector, for each and every project, we have got a full-time person for every 500 units. In cases of leave and sick leave, then there will be a rotation. The inspection as such needs to be fully explained whether the challenges would be more in the non-subsidy or the subsidy. But for the committee, I want to say the technical matter is an administrative matter. And we can safely say to the committee, we will attend to that. When it comes to the issues of materials, there are a number of areas, I think members of the committee are aware, that we as NHBRC have been mandated to look into ensuring that there is sufficient quality material on site. We are also setting up our own testing center to make sure that we can assist the industry to make quick tests. The use of asbestos in the industry, we have met with material suppliers, and we have said to material suppliers that it is not acceptable. Assistance would need from the housing consumers and players in the industry is to report to us areas where assistance is still being utilized. In our books, it is not being utilized. Now, the role of provinces, municipalities, NHBRC, and national departments. I need to talk about three phases in this regard. Phase 1 would be since 1994. Up to 2018, NHBRC was not involved in the subsidy sector. Now, because of this phase of gap, there seems to be a challenge in understanding our role in some of the sectors, in some of the communities. Now, from 2003 in particular, provinces started, that is phase 2, started to enroll projects with us. There are agreements between provinces and NHBRC regarding projects that need to be enrolled, say for the rural areas. All new projects are supposed to be enrolled. The challenges have been, provinces have been very slow in enrolling projects with the NHBRC. But the last phase, phase 3 that we're talking about, after the debate of this committee, and after our previous meeting presentation in this committee, it is very interesting to report to you that provinces have moved. These very sessions that have been held have helped us to get provinces to enroll. We are now seeing the change. We have records, you see them in our annual report, you see them in our quarterly report. Provinces have not been enrolled. That is phase three of the process. Now the involvement of the MEC and the role of the provinces, we talked about registration as one of the issues. I'm just trying to get it into this explanation enrollment. There are a number of different approaches adopted by provinces. The NSDRC position is, if you are going to build and be a developer, you must be registered with us. There are instances where you find that the developer is a private individual, not a municipality, not a province. And under that developer, there would be subcontractors. Yes. We are arguing continuously that all subcontractors must be registered with the NSDRC. The developer, whoever is going to be engaged in the development process, must be registered with the NSDRC. Registration with the NSDRC assures us and the public that the person is registering understands the role played by the NSDRC. I come to the issue of the happy letter. Again, we need to separate happy letter in the non-subsidy sector and the subsidy sector. In the non-subsidy sector, in bonded housing, we as NHBRC need a guarantee that this property has been enrolled. If there are any structural defects, we as NHBRC should home builder say we will undertake the building. Now, a structure fails, and when the structure fails, we go and get a new person to repair. Now, the happy letter in that context is a happy letter from the housing consumer who has complained to us, saying, yes, the builder has now fixed NHBRC assigned. I'm happy with the project. It has not been NHBRC. It's not involved. That's non-subsidy. The healthy matter in the subsidy sector, I'll leave it to the department to explain. When it comes to the issue of just trying to get back to Alkane, I don't want to mention anything. I'll ask if Alkane, if I've forgotten something, I'm with colleagues here who will assist me. I'll go to KwaZulu-Natal. The issue of NHDRC hampering entry into the industry is of interest to us because that cancels concerns as well. The registration fee annual membership of the NHDRC is 600 cents to be a continuous member of the NHDRC. But we have been requested in most of this correspondence, we are supposed to really verify whether the builder can do his job. How do we do it? We charge 750 for administrative purposes. They need to write a test. We need to assure the public that the person who is registered with us is credible. They need to be checked with the IT team to do credit checks. So for that, they pay 750. That is a once-off. Once you are a member of the NHBRC, you pass the test, then you automatically pay 600 grand per annum. Our argument from the NHBRC, the 600 is not really exorbitant. But we need to be advanced further on it. Because what we do as NHBRC, if a builder fails to check the test, he's required to come back to the NHBRC and undergo training so that he can understand the role of the NHBRC. The last amount that the NHBRC, the home builder pays, it's 100 shows. That is for your menu. If you put the part 1, part 3, part 3, which is the guide, the fee is nominal. It's below the cost of production, as we're talking today. The 100 rand for part 1, part 3, part 3. There is a misunderstanding in the industry, and we're trying to explain it. Home builders are claiming that they are paying enrollment fees. We're talking nonsense. No home builder is paying enrollment fees. The enrollment fee is paid by the housing consumer. It's the housing consumer that gets a warranty certificate. What the umbrella does is a conjugate. Because the umbrella is saying, I'm going to build a house. He's saying, the are incentives for housing homebuilders and housing consumers will pay cash. The are incentives where we'll claim the money from the bank. Now, homebuilders have been creating this impression that they are liable for the employment. They are not liable. It's a cost to the housing consumer. It's the housing consumer that buys a service which is called a warranty. I need to add that for 600 rand that the NHGRC is because it touches on the Limpopo issue. Once you are a member of the NHGRC, your employees are entitled to free training. If you have got 100, all the 100 are entitled to free training. If you have got one, that one person, including the owner of the company, you are entitled to free training. The minimum cost of free training in Limpopo has been 18,000. Now, you are paying 600 rand, buying a service of 18,000 rand. Now, that we consider to be a service to the home builder. Now, that's our motivation for saying 600 rand is low. I've also indicated to the withdrawal document, which I apologize for, it was meant to be for the national department, and it was also meant for us to explain what we are doing to help unregistered home builders. The people that have been excluded. We want to, the National Department, as I was talking to the DG, it was his input after I think he visited some time. And his input was that he had problems with NHGRC only concentrating on the people that are already in the system and leaving out people that are not on the system. And the amendment is to say unregistered home builders such as the unemployed youth and women should be brought in for training so that we can start to see them playing a role, which means they will be enjoying the free training. So that's how we're trying to attend to individual employees, to make them part of the process. When it comes to the issue of NHB, I was addressing the issue of entry level. We need some guidance there, but that's what we've done. With regard to the deregistration, withdrawal, and suspension. Currently, we have suspended 118,000 homebuilders. The 123 homebuilders that we drew from the NHGRC. We have set up, Council was appointed last year, to set up the deregistration commission. The latest figures, I think, within the current financial year, since now Council is going to start with the disciplinary process. So, in terms of the law, all builders we'll have to go through a disciplinary committee chaired by a person outside the NHGRC and the verdict will then be given either in favor of the NHGRC or in favor of the housing consumer or in favor of the home builder. So there is action with regard to this registration. Disappearance of home builders from site. And a home builder with regard to NHGRC site, he can disappear if he has withdrawn. It has been deregistered. But this is disappearance about the person not completing his work. I think the answers have been given. Nobody in terms of our book should be paid unless he has performed. So I think the province will talk more around that one. I also now want to move to the issues raised on the role on the inspection side. I forgot to give one thing. In the previous financial year ending to April, we have done 190,000 inspections in the non-subsidy sector, and we have done 51,000 in all inspections. In the subsidy sector, we have approved 76,000 home units, and so we have approved 53,000 home units, but most of these units have not been completed. And we rejected 22,000 home units from different provinces where they did not comply. With regard to let me pause a bit. Madam, can I have that introduction? Because there is some I've talked about the disappearance. I've talked about the last point on the employees of the consultant. And I think I need now to talk punitive measures against inspectors, contractors, housing consumers. A bit of a challenge now in the subsidy sector is that payment of enrollment fees in the subsidy sector is done by province, not by housing consumers. Government pays an enrollment fee of 1.7, it's a one-off payment. When the housing consumer gets the house, it's a final payment. So the housing consumer is not paid. Like I've reported previously to this committee, we have not received a single payment from any province where we have inspected for failure to do work, the major work. If we get it, we will start giving a report in the subsidy sector regarding the major work in the subsidy sector. No single province has claimed anything from it. But there are also provinces that were not registered with the NHL. And this emphasize unregistered or unenrolled homes are not covered by the NHL. Any structural failure goes back to the municipality or the province. We will not be to give a feel of what we are doing in the northern case and in the northwest. There were projects that were started and those projects were not enrolled. We have sent 13 engineering teams to Northwest, one to Northern Cape, I'm not sure how many to Free State. What we need from those provinces that really want to get the properties involved, they will have to conduct geotechnical research and provide those geotechnical research. They'll have to complete all the necessary documentation and we use the radius NHBRC to enroll those units. We've got two levels, the forensic audit, where we write a report about the structure, giving guidance to the province. That does not mean we're going to enroll. We will only enroll once we've got a full geotechnical report on each and every section. So that's how we are trying to assist some of the provinces to enroll some of the properties. With regard to person, I think I've tried to touch on all of that. I'm not sure which one I've missed. I think from the NABRC side, I also need to add the issue of the innovative technology, because this remains, no, the involvement of the MEC, the role played by the MEC. In terms of the amendment, while you read, you notice, in terms of the Principal Act, application has to go to the minister. But it's for a small group of people that are trying to avoid the law of those who are not intending to enroll or register with the NHBRC. It does not affect the subsidy sector. It only affects the non-subsidy sector. I think records of that will show that the numbers in this area are also decreasing. What a home builder would do is apply to the NHBRC in terms of the amendment and say to the NHBRC, I do not want to enroll my house. The NHBRC will then seek reason and say, on what basis are you trying to defy the law? Then you say some reason. Well, there are skills required in terms of the current legislation and they are demonstrable. NHBRC has agreements with them, real estate has an issue. We will say the house is not enrolled. If we say it's not enrollable, it means that this person will not even get a loan. We'll say, yes, this person is a home builder. We leave it to the bank, and that's why accepting or rejecting. Then we've got a case where we'll say, NHBRC considers this a very risky area, and then NHBRC again is the bank to either engage. But the housing consumer is told that that unit will not be sold within the next 5 years because we'll be exposing the housing consumer to a risk, the buyer to a risk. Now, this type of appeal, the minister is delegating them. Now, the application, the exemption, the minister is delegating the exemption to the NHBRC. Only when the NHBRC has said no in the non-subsidy sector, then
the person has the right to appeal that decision of the prospective home builder and housing consumer. And that's where then the case could be escalated to the minister. I think, Chairperson, I'll leave it to Anita about innovative technology. There has also been new input with regard to innovative technology, where part of the process of speeding up housing delivery has been the introduction of the Arithmology Innovation Hub, where you've got a number of alternative methods of construction, where as we have seen the ministry are saying people should not really be stuck on brick and mortar. Now, our view is we need to then establish a fund for innovative technology. And part of our recommendation is that for the purposes of the IT minister, in consultation with the MHVRC, may establish a fund to promote research and utilization of innovative technology and materials to enhance quality. Again, it's one way of addressing challenges of materials, wrong materials on site. But it needs to be re-emphasized that materials on site today can be either MHVRC compliant, AgriMark compliance, FABS compliance, ISO compliance, by the arm or other authorities that the National Department of Trade and Industry is going to accredit for them to get approved materials. We as MHVRC look at ISO compliance. Half the time they get endorsed, I must indicate. It's very rare that MHVRC or AgriMark or FABS will reject any innovative materials. Chairperson, I think I've tried to address some of the main issues. I'm not sure if you'd like to. Okay. Chairperson, it doesn't come from the problem. We are still dealing with issues of rural housing, where MHVRC is not a major player. From our side, we'd also like to get some assistance from provinces to assist us on issues of ownership. We are not getting easy solutions, but we are told that the National Department is dealing with the matter. So we leave it to the National Department to respond on issues of land ownership and loans in rural areas where people want to have an NHPRC working.
I in actual fact thought that, you know, maybe we are best disadvantaged because of the submission by the SNK. But probably the question of rural housing will come up. But let's hope in the final mandate to do that. Maybe we can advise.
Okay.
Just
for clarity again on rural housing, and I'm looking at the subsidy sector. Stated prior that there hasn't been much movement in the rural sector of the subsidy sector. Now there is in those provinces that have vast rural areas, in KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, there is a tangible movement by government to service those areas for the provision of housing. But the mere fact that in KwaZulu-Natal, the Department of Housing has stated that if you don't register NHRDC, you throw your application out, right? But that will apply to the development in the rural areas as well. The mere fact that they are paying their 1.7% registration, but not registration, their fee, those things have to be serviced. So I want that undertaking that whether it's rural or urban, in this subsidy sector, the mere fact that it has been paid, the service has to comply. That's my one question. But I'll hold here my other question of the rural communal ownership for later, because that has a monstrous issue of its own.
But interestingly, Northern Cape, with all its things, just been declared the elephant problem. Well, of course, Khalaka is making us rural now with the incorporation of
Khalaka. you must push it to Rauke.
I would endeavor just to close the gap where, you know, as a department we are looking at areas that are not covered by the NMDRC, because they have covered their substantial what we are doing, also the same way. First, I will start with the happy letter. The understanding of what is the policy, we have a subsidy which has to translate into transport. So the Haitian letter is the last stage of, or is the last stage of the handing over of the property. And only then can transfer take place, can take place after the owner has said, I have received this house, it's now mine. And then it is only then that transfer from government to the owner takes place. And we have a problem in some facility services, but for different reasons. We at the housing, we then have absent beneficiaries or untraceable beneficiaries at the end of the contract, at the end of the delivery point when the construction is completed. And then we then have instances in certain areas where houses will stand unlawful time and possibly being underlined or being open. We are now looking, but for different reasons, we are now looking at delinking the subsidy to our planning processes, such that now our database will indicate the need, and so that we are able to plan for growth while balancing, of course, the individual needs of community mobilization and not one size fits all. But the HP letter mainly meant by the department in fact can say, by signing that HP letter, the person that is when even the title deed will be made available to the person. So that is the intention mainly. And I will then come to the question of payment. How does the money flow from government to the contractor? In an ideal situation or as a general policy, I may not be up to speed, but I'll just indicate what is understood, what is the general practice. We have five stages where a payment is P1 to P5. P1 in general terms, I think, is just a question of planning and servicing the extent. That would be the P1 payment, and then that would be the milestone when we have services. And I think P2, as we have said by the technical people, I think the P2 is when they now we establish the contract, I think it's the foundation. And P3 will be the wall, P4 the roof, and then P5 will be the heavy data. Now, if there are instances of inspection that takes place, we may accede to that there is a problem maybe of inspection in certain areas. But that is being corrected, like we have input from NHRC. Now, it has happened in the past that there was no NHRC active in the local housing group. Maybe the peak was after 94, so up to 2003-2004. And for those houses where there was obvious structural collapse or disaster, the department introduced what we call the certification program, which is not linked necessarily to the program of the NHRC. That program was meant to specifically intervene to those areas where there was neglect or shoddy work to an extent that there was a need for government intervention. I was still in the province, I remember the instances, that in some instances in housing, there were very specific in the intervention with regards to ratification processes, not related to NRC. In those areas where it happened before, we had NRC in place. I may not have the record of the success of that program, but I think it was a one-off with intention that
the following program that we will work in a more organized fashion. We have now a NGRC, we should be able to cover the properties that are going to be built and post 2003. I think we had an NGRC in regard to the successes of that intervention. And then we also have a problem of, now those typhoons, the NGRC has explained that there may have been a gap, but I want you also to explain the cost that goes into block projects. A block project that is 10 years old, it will have cost us maybe 30,000 to build that house. We paid maybe 50% and make an assumption. And for us as a department to complete that house, we have venture sector escalation of materials from that time up till now. And our planning tools and our planning instruments do not allow us to add, to come with that money and be able to factor and escalate and come with the escalation. We said there was a complete subsidy in 1995-96, and there was a block project. That project is still lying there. When we intervened in 2007, you have a different formula, you have different costumes. And that is where the problem seems to be exaggerating what is already enough. We need to do our homework as a department and, in order to cost the block project and be able to complete those projects. I can confirm that the work that we got, but it will be maybe difficult in another forum in the budget process and so on. But there is an intervention to be able to unblock such projects. Most of them are, the resources are not there, even in that budget to complete those projects because of those conditions. And then I also want to talk about what we understand about the role of the NEC. We know that we have a problem with the certain instances, but we accept that it was explained here that it's actually more than what we expected. But our understanding was that the national department is a policy department, which is a funding department, and then it works through the NEC to execute monitoring and evaluation and also through the municipalities. That means the critical role of the MEC will be then, among other things, is the monitoring and evaluation role of the project. That means to make sure that what is something is going on. And the MEC will then be having the NGRC as a technical arm that will intervene decisively on issues that are related to solely work and so forth. But now the administrative within the department, the NEC will be able to say, this municipality, it can be accredited. I can give this municipality powers to identify projects, powers to authorize projects, powers to even receive the budget and do more. So because accreditation is for three levels, and you not have the first level is that the municipality should be, in fact, or I think most municipalities are at the first level. They are able to identify within their planning process, identify problems. But now they depend on the funding from the NEC. In the accreditation, the NEC will then have to delegate the funding of those projects and on the authorization of those projects. That means the NEC has to let go of some of those responsibilities. But at the moment, those responsibilities are with the NEC. And it is only after the accreditation process that let go that the NEC will then have to build the strength to monitor the project and not be hands-on in terms of the building construction. But that is easy. Now, what becomes critical is the role of the monitoring and evaluation. The department, since this year, I think at the new camp, is mainly because of the intervention of the monitoring evaluation. We were brought as a team in the new structure of the department to bring the tools of monitoring and evaluation in line with the presidential and the premier structure that are monitoring the performance of the country as a whole. I think the new framework of monitoring evaluation came after our 10 years of democracy in the U.S. when the country was evaluating performance. Then we realized that no, we needed to beef up this sector. So we now have a more resource monitoring and evaluation, and with the new structure, we will be able to turn up on the situation. But it should be noted, we should bring to the attention that we don't have monitoring evaluation as we had it in the past. The difference now is that we also do non-financial monitoring and evaluation. In the past, it was mainly what money thing. But now we are doing even non-financial, even social impact. You know, and we're doing that jointly with the South Africa and other departments. And with issues of rural housing, the issue of rural housing, we had a study of rural housing. And then we had some successes, but we also had some setback. We were giving some homework to do at the department. I think we had a problem of on-farm rental houses. Mm. In that people who have been staying on the farm for the rest of their life, and now they are going to be reduced to be rental as people who are challenging it. They are not owners, and so there were issues of Kenya that the rights of the farm workers are being eroded. So that if the farm, the house owner is a farmer, I think that is the instance. If I'm returned from the farm where I've been staying for 20 years or all my life, and I'm to be employed next door, the next farm, I lose my rights in that farm, and then I go as a tenant, and then in the new farm. And then I lose my historical right of having a home, and I'm now going to be a provider next door. Those were the issues when we didn't find balance, and we're more legal than we had. We send back to some home, so that we don't erode the rights of the people on house farming. But off-farm housing receives a lot of support, off-farm housing for legal. Labor challenge, there was a lot of support in terms of the government coming the infrastructure, funding, and the idea was that people in the rural, in the farm should also receive same services as other people who are in the urban areas in terms of services and water and so forth. That will be my input in a very quickly, and I hope my colleagues will be able to do that.
Yeah, not a question or a comment. I just want to make a request, as requested by some of our committee members, that when this bill was being drafted, you had input from, I think, three organizations, the Banking Association and USA, the Industry Federation. Could we have sight of those inputs before the final mandate? I'm asking for my problems. I don't know about other problems. We want to cite all those inputs before that time.
That is before next week. Before the end of the session. But the 12th is on
session for a big win.
Is it possible?
I have a feeling that they are sent money to official research of the government.
Okay.
Okay.
So then, if that is the case, maybe just as a way of a kind of comment on the issue of rural housing, it would be good to get the program support on some of the mandates that we give them. Stemming out of the housing in Java, especially on rural housing, because the advantage of this committee is that same members also belong to Land and Environmental Affairs Commission.
And the last greeting we got from Land of Fest, it seems that Land of Fest is a diplomat on land availability, acquisition, and all the sorts of policy that end up capital in within the context of rural housing. You remember where the city was being off? No, that we're not supposed to talk about it. But it seems that we're not speaking to one another. We're not seeing the same truth when it comes to issues of rural housing. So it would be good that such processes are clarified so that we don't have this disintegrated approach to resolving the same problem of settling our people and so forth. Nevertheless,
that's a side comment. Yeah, maybe to add to your comment, Chairperson, we are at an advantage of having one committee serving different portfolios. If maybe at a particular point we could pull both of them together, then we discuss. I think we'll be fast-tracking things then to leave it with them. But they do it somewhere. We are better placed to do it. You know, where they talk of rural housing, etc., off-farm housing. I'm very much interested in that because that will be the solution to many problems of farm evictions, etc. When off-farm housing could be looked into very accurately. You know, those are the issues we could discuss, you know, as one committee, but having, you know, the double barrel of dealing with many portfolios, which you can pull together at once and, you know, start moving forward.
Not so far, what worries me in that meeting was the question of all farms and access to them. It was like they were saying different language or different forms. What housing wants to do. So it's quite, yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. That maybe at some point once you can find time, we'll bring them together.
Together, yes.
And then you can tell us exactly what
it is. Interesting, quite interesting.
Okay, members, I don't know if there's anything, any further questions before we allow the NHBRC and the housing department to close their load cut. We must go back to and report the ideas that the kind of response, and on the basis of that, then we see final money.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, a very interesting question. I think it would be a good for thought. I heard both presenters talking about the applicant not traceable. Now, that is just amazing. This brings me to a question, though they may not respond now, but it's also a very good thought. That in terms of this, I don't know if the department is aware of this. My assessment is that in the intergovernmental relationship, I don't think the province speaks to the municipality at that level. The reason being that if you talk about applicant notification, very recently when we took parliamentary people in the Free State, in Paris, they were exactly the same thing, and I don't believe Haugen such that wrong people are always being allocated to houses, of the very same LPG houses. Now, the problem which I want to relate to, in Paris it was the same. And when we questioned the Noirche district municipality, they said, yes, that problem is in Pirituna is in Hamburg, where the department went ahead, whether it's official or whoever, went ahead and built houses there. And the district municipality there was not even aware. And wrong people had occupying those houses in Pirituna. Unfortunately, we could not have time to go and interact with those people and find out where do you imagine? Because there are people who are complaining that we don't have houses, but there are houses being put up and the municipality is not even aware of now. So let me, I put that as a first proposal.
And also the last one is this principle of thought. If we talk of, when we talk of quality, on material in context. Now, I don't know whether the inspectors are a kind of procrastination, actually, are a quality controllers or quality assessors. So that we should know that it's actually the material used, whether the inspector will look at the material and say that this material is not good. But me as an layman would say, oh, this is the Mansara steel, this is the face brick steel. I can only identify that, but the quality, I don't know. Those are the things I think that he's not responding now. But.
I have a question to NGCLC. There is a manual that we were shown during the provincial week at Singapore. This manual we're questioning why the walls of active houses are not in Kanoki. But we're showing the manual that said it's good to do it like that. But the problem is, most of the projects that we have visited during that week, the very same place where the walls, the inner wall and the outer wall are not interlocking, there is a serious problem. But they bring the manual to say no. NHPRC is agreeing with us. Here is complex. And we saw the manual. And can you clarify that too, so that I'm able to go and talk to them to say, no, this is the position of the National NHPRC. The walls are not interlocking. He says, in fact, they put the walls in such a way that, you know, there's no binding, and they, I don't know what they call it, they mention the name. You know, they put the bricks in such a way that, you know, you are able to see the other side. You see, I think I've shown you on my cell that I'm potentially quite close. You are able to see the other side. They're trying to minimize using a lot of things. So they're saying no, that is acceptable by NHPRC. And you get, you know, they try to stand next to the wall. You feel like, no, that is going to fall completely. But even the interlocking, you know, it's of such a nature that you feel we are not doing justice here. We are not doing what we are supposed to do to the people. What you give that to an elderly lady who is left with their grandchildren while they get into that house, then you can imagine what will happen. What is happening there? I can try and trace the manual, the page that they've shown us. You see? They've tried explaining, but to me it's not acceptable. It's completely not acceptable. Thank you.
In the manual, doesn't it say that it is correct? Or is it by virtue of them classifying the action?
You know, Jefferson, we questioned the municipality then, and the municipality is the one that brought the manual. But unfortunately, we were just, because the manual is just there, they just made copies for us as members to say NHPRC is saying it's good because they go for about four layers, and then there's I don't know what is the wire, what you put inside.
Before
you put it between the wall inside and the wall outside, you see. But there are cracks that are visible there.
The
those that
did not make submissions. No, the ones that made submissions. The submissions that we got, how are they going to be captured in terms of the... What is the next process from here?
Were you the only two?
Yeah.
Well, Frank, I don't know if you want to make your comments on...
All right, I want to say it's to go and see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it sounds very irregular.
have talked about innovative technology. So that would be a very new innovation. So it would not allow for funding between we want to see.
But it's very prevalent.
So we need to go and investigate and say this is not on. Unfortunately, it was not certified by the NGO. And I guess it's not certified by Agrima. I guess it's not certified by Mentec. I guess it's not certified by any group. So we need to send an NGRC. So we say we detail, when take the picture and then we will
see. Okay. I think that would be very good. No. I always believe in one thing. Let's take an example. And mobilize a lot of publicity behind that example. Because sometimes you hear departments saying, no, we are acting, but we don't know. People don't know that action is being taken. But just grab party. Grab me. And okay, fine. All right. So thank you very much to the department and MHPRC for the presentation. The process, we are going to compile. I've just been informed that we should have had the license officer present so that they take note of the responses given to the provincial submission. But I think it's only in the best interest of the candidates in the absence that we compile the report of this meeting before the end of this week. They are informed so that by next week, probably, they will say, okay, fine, we are satisfied with this, I will have a response, but all, no, we are still steadfast on our position around this matter of problem. And then we'll take it from there next week, honorable one. Meaning, therefore, Mpumalanga, over and above the kind of response or letter they are going to receive, they will also have the benefit of the proceedings of the meeting, including Northwest, and the Eastern Cape, and the Free State, of course. Okay, thank you very much. Members, you are requested to remain behind, especially in David, in order to allow our special delegate to catch the flag. Thank you very much for your presence. Yeah.